Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library, brought in the book A Different Kind of Luxury, Japanese Lessons in Simple Living and Inner Abundance by author Andy Cotier. This book presents 11 portraits from rural Japan of men and women who have transitioned to sustainable, fulfilling lives. One of the customer reviews on Amazon.com, Bob Sanchez, says, quote, "A different kind of luxury should make its readers evaluate the way that they appreciate time," unquote. Schinkel begins his review of the book by reading from the introduction.
I have always thought it was possible to live a great life. Beyond all the nightmares we hear about in the news, there is a larger world surrounding us, not just the resplendent world of nature, but also our own potential as people to live well, to connect with each other, to do meaningful work, to make powerful art, and to forge a different kind of future for ourselves and for the next generation. These ideas were still very informed for me, however, when in our mid-20s, my partner Cynthia and I moved to Japan. Deciding to teach English for a year or two in a country we knew very little about was a bit of a sideways step in pursuit of this goal of crafting this good life for ourselves. Before we decided to go to Japan, we had met some vibrant and intelligent people on the west coast of the U.S. who had created lives in the countryside that were more sustainable and more in touch with nature than the hyper-busy lives of stress and environmental destruction that most people in the U.S. seem to be living. Japan was supposed to be a way station for us, a means to an end. We'd heard that Japan was even more money-oriented and status-conscious than the U.S., though that was hard to believe, and we knew it was a very conservative place. Arriving in Japan, we found much of this to be true, but in the course of doing some environmental activism, we were completely surprised to meet some entirely different types of people from what we had been expecting. As my Japanese improved, I came to understand that these people were living out a real philosophy. They had set up their lives, or more specifically their days, so that they had time to think on the most important questions. It's from the introduction to A Different Kind of Luxury, Japanese Lessons in Simple Living and Inner Abundance by Andy Cotier. To most of us, luxury is something we buy, something we consume, something we can have and enjoy for as long as the funding holds out. Our author tells us about a different kind of luxury, a luxury of time, a luxury of thought, a luxury of deep-seated well-being. I think there is a bit of Thoreau's Walden here. There is a bit of the countercultural 1960s here. And yet a different kind of luxury looks forward, not back, with men and women in Japan who are crafting every day lives of purpose and meaning in the midst of the hurly-burly of the industrial or post-industrial world. It is perhaps a luxury that all of us, whether we live in the East, the West, the North, the South, may want to consider adopting as our goal in life. These are portraits of the lives of men and women who have decided to pursue a path in life very different from their compatriots in modern Japan. As our author tells us in his introduction, "The people I've written about in this book have done this not by following any monolithic program, but by finding a different kind of enjoyment in life. Not something that we purchase off the shelf, but rather the kind we can create in ourselves, from our very own lives. Although the answers they provide may seem small in scale, the more each of us moves toward a more fulfilling life, reducing our contribution to the destruction of the earth and taking care of ourselves and our communities, the better world we will bequeath to those who come next." Indeed, we find that these are people who can speak intelligently of their conscious philosophical choice to live nearly self-sufficient lives, and in the next breath, engage the author in a farcical give and take about the importance of tea in Japanese tradition, then and now. As our author writes about Atsuko Watanabe, one of these people who is living a different kind of luxury, "The long, luxuriant hours of one of our interviews progresses. Tea time often comes around, and the discussions between Atsuko and her husband veer into dialects about this or that kind of tea, the grade of the tea, the size of the cup, the proper kind of teacup to use when drinking this particular variety, or how the glaze on the cup does or doesn't fit this kind of tea. 'Let's at least drink the first cup in the proper fashion,' she says." "Huh? What's wrong here? Her husband says. It's jammed up in the pot. Oh, it's powdered tea. It's a good quality, but it's cheaper because it's powdered. I admit to loving this minutiae of connoisseurship, writes the author, even as I know they are both half-parodying it, laughing at the rarefied world of tea in Japan that they simultaneously just happen to know a hell of a lot about. Now the husband is wincing as he drinks the tea. Yah! It's too bitter! His wife lets out another gale of laughter, then looks at me. Hey, that's like when you made the mulled apple cider for everyone and put too many spices in it. I remember you just suffered and drank it down like it was supposed to have that much spice in it. As we talk, the lyrical bird calls and the crescendoing insects, which then fade back into the silence of the afternoon, are always reminding me of the place Atsuko and her husband have chosen to live. I can feel the thickness of the air coming in from outside and the sense of the plants that live on the wealth of the fertile soil, which make me aware, too, of the permeability of the house itself, Japanese architecture not walling off the outside world. Each of these things is speaking subliminally as what is valuable to Atsuko and her husband, and I recognize to me. And so as we read these short biographies, these glimpses into lives of different kinds of luxury, as we dive deeply into this other world of Japan, a Japan populated by men and women who are both of this world, after all, many of them are teachers, village counselors, farmers, mothers, fathers, flute players, and local activists. And yet they are crafting their lives so that they live somewhat apart, even in conformity-driven Japan, with lives that intertwine work and art and thinking and tea. The people about whom our author writes are living by and large away from the hurried urban centers, often deep in the green mountains that make up so much of the Japanese interior. Clearly, our author is enchanted by the living landscapes of Japan, be they the natural or the human-made. And it is this enchantment, I think, this affection for a land and a people who seem still so foreign to the average Westerner that makes his book more readable, more grounded for those of us who have yet to experience the Japan our author has. For we can all relate to the beauties of nature and the peculiarities of humankind. These, then, are men and women on their journey to finding a different kind of luxury from that so many of us pursue, who have come to practice a variety of religious philosophies as well. Some practice Zen, many are intrigued by many of the tenets of Hinduism, and in one case, they have converted to Catholicism. Even the book itself, as an object, is a lesson in a different kind of luxury, for while the book is small in size, it is a lovely example of less can be more. There are precious few books published that are such a beautiful intersection of topic, text, and presentation. A different kind of luxury is just such a book. Short, but long in its size, the book opens with a moving and thoughtful essay by author Andy Courtier, who shares his writing success with the people whose stories he tells. As he writes, each person here has agreed to be in this book, and each of them has generously given dozens of hours of their time patiently explaining their ways of thinking, bridging the cultural gap, and re-examining Japanese words or concepts to me when I did not at first understand. They have let me stay in their homes, fixed me meals, provided me with copies of their written work, and have served me innumerable cups of tea, along with hundreds of other small kindnesses. This book is in a large way of their making as well. The color photos that open this book give us a multifaceted introduction to these men and women that our author just thanked, and the activities in which they are engaged day to day, clearly referencing the life stories told later in the book. Then, the black and white photos that flow through the book's text continue to offer us visual glimpses into the simply styled, but hardly simple, lives these Japanese folks are crafting. Yes, a different kind of luxury could easily have been presented as a luscious coffee table book with mouth-watering scenery, simple living portraits, and rich color plates. But thank goodness, a different kind of luxury is instead a feast for the mind and the spirit. For all the protestations that this is not a book intended to be read as a guidebook to a better life, Indeed, our author writes, this book is not a blueprint for achieving the good life, nor is it a how-to book. It's a book of stories, the stories of 11 people's journeys, both literal and metaphorical. The stories can be read sequentially or in any order you choose. At times, our author seems unable to hold himself back from musing about just how wonderful our lives can be lived if only we would bring such simplicity into our world. As he states at the conclusion of his chapter about Atsuko Watanabe, I consider that Atsuko is one of the most buoyant and lively people I know. Her life is full of laughter. Yet this happens, it seems, without her trying to pursue it, without it being her goal. Her life, it seems to me, is suffused in the tranquility that can be found only in nature, breathing crisp mountain air early in the morning, listening to the gentle calls of the night insects on a warm summer's evening, or resting her eyes on the colors and textures of an old wooden farmhouse instead of the harsh geometry and neon of a city. It is through her practice of not grasping for either pleasure or comfort, she has both in abundance. Sometimes, like this evening, the pleasure is just that of sitting and talking deep into the night. It is, now that I think of it, a kind of comfort that we humans could practice in perpetuity for thousands of years. It seems to me that for all his efforts at distancing himself from his subjects and offering his readers a discreet but sensitive portrayal of their lives, our author too wants to share the lessons he has learned from his many years going to and returning from the land of simple living and inner abundance. And I, for one, am glad he has done so. Let's finish this thoughtful book by reading from the story or a look at the life of yet another Japanese person who is trying to live a richer and yet different kind of luxurious life. Sen Oizumi is this fellow's name. And as our author is writing about this fellow, whom he describes as a potter, an anarchist, an anti-nuclear activist, of course there's some need for money. But when you use money to solve problems, the necessity to think for yourself disappears. You can resolve all your difficulties by using money or buying a product to fix it for you. Just like being a member of a large group or organization, you can let the group do a lot of the thinking for you. But for me, Mr. Oizumi states, the opportunity to think for yourself is too valuable to be wasted that way. And who knows how long we will be here. We've got to treasure the time we have. After dinner, I gather my things together, writes our author, puts them in my old car, and prepare to head out to meet my next interviewee. Oizumi brings out a couple of boxes of sumi he's made to give me, and I put them in the back seat. Just before I leave his homestead on the mountainside, we say to each other, let's meet again someday soon, even though we both know we have no idea what will happen in our futures. I am thankful to him, though, for reminding me of the uncertainties of life. As I drive the road out of the mountains, I hope I can always remember his words. Quote, if I'm busy, I might overlook something magnificent and splendid, like a rare mushroom in the forest. And who knows when I might see such an amazing thing again, end quote. It's a very thoughtful, it's a very beautiful, and it's a lovely book to read and to ponder. It's called A Different Kind of Luxury, Japanese Lessons in Simple Living in Inner Abundance, and it's available at many of our fine libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.
That's Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library. He's reviewed A Different Kind of Luxury, Japanese Lessons in Simple Living and Inner Abundance by Andy Cotier and published by Stonebridge Press.